Hello, and welcome to the Software Stories podcast from Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Andy Davis. In this show, I'll be chatting to software experts from all sectors about their careers in tech. The show aims to bring you insights, anecdotes, and stories from like-minded professionals that you can learn from and apply to your own career. If you like the show and you want to hear more from us, you can follow us via SoundCloud, iTunes, or Spotify, or join us on Slack. Thank you, and enjoy the show. All right, cool. We got Dimitri Lurko here. He's the head of DevOps at Love Holidays. Thanks so much, Dimitri. I'm very much looking forward to the chat.
Hi, Andy. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it should be fun. I've got a lot to talk about. Funnily enough, actually, I've not really had anyone on the show for a long, long time in DevOps, so I feel really rusty. So I hope you can just stay with me and not think that I'm asking too silly of questions, but I'm very much looking forward to kind of having a bit of a educational experience here. So no pressure.
That should work out.
I mean, it's been phenomenal. And, you know, before we kind of get stuck into things, the rise of kind of Kubernetes in particular, I've been kind of paying somewhat attention to. And it seems to have been like absolutely like, you know, astonishing just like how much momentum it's been able to build. You've obviously been doing, you know, you've been in the DevOps for a long time. Why is this had such a phenomenal rise to fame, if you like?
That's a very good question, Andy. I believe that Kubernetes itself has hugely benefited from the brand name, the fact that it came from Google, whom are one of the most well-known infrastructure driven organizations in the world, who just have the most bespoke, outscaled infrastructure 24/7 across the globe, every single country. Mm-hmm. So whatever comes from their end has already got pre-approval from the community. Mm-hmm. And given that they open source their secret source of how they're doing things internally and giving away to public, I think it kickstarted this journey. Plus, at the time, we had a number of competing container orchestration platforms, including Docker guys themselves trying to offer a sort of lightweight container orchestration called Swarm. Mm-hmm. So Kubernetes was a lot more feature-rich and a lot more thought through of how things can work out for both small and large organizations. It wasn't the best fit for too small of startups because of inherited complexities that you had to go through in its early days. However, fast forward 5 years, it matured a lot and it's super simple to run Kubernetes. Even if you only care about running a couple of pods, you can still drive value out of it, which is phenomenal for any kind of platform, because usually you're just trying to find a path of least resistance and get stuff running if you're an early stage startup. Mm-hmm. But Kubernetes is still very likely to be the right choice for even this proof of concept, small scale deployments.
It's been interesting because it's almost like from a in a lot of layman's terms as well, it's like, say, it's cost efficient, but also doing the best job. It's almost like, you know, it's kind of the best of both worlds. That almost doesn't really exist, does it? But it seems to be kind of all encompassing, if that makes sense.
It does, yeah. I have a practical example of how I came across Kubernetes myself. Once you start to manage infrastructure, you start to manage VMs. You need to make sure they're all configured the same and identically. It's all really hard. So then came containers like Docker that said all of your applications and their dependencies and configurations, they're all baked in, so they never change. And if it works for a developer, it's going to work for your staging. It's going to work on your production environment. No difference. Therefore, you should no longer chase a tail thinking who changed what where. Mm-hmm. So you have this immutability mandated by the platform, which is great benefit on its own. But when you start to package things into containers, they're also much more easy to distribute, store, and handle, even at the scale. So personally, I started my journey with Kubernetes about 2.5 years ago, and I wanted to change my continuous integration platform to be more scalable, to instead of like me giving it 20 VMs to sit around and do nothing most of the time and then do some builds, mm-hmm. I wanted it to spin up compute on the fly when developer is pushing the code, build it, and then give back the resources for some other needs. Mm. So that's how I came across Kubernetes, and it was really a tough journey to get going on physical infrastructure 2.5 years ago. But if you fast forward it to this day with platforms like JKE from Google, mm-hmm. I can have my pods running within 5 minutes of creation of the account.
That's crazy.
And there is no overhead for me to maintain whatsoever. So you're just getting pure value out of it.
Yeah, that's incredible. It's, you know, I know kind of you obviously were really generous and sent over some notes, but to put it in perspective, you know, you mentioned that, you know, the company you work for, Love Holidays, you know, has had the ability to migrate, you know, in under like 6 months, you know, and that was kind of during a peak trading season. Like, I think these things would essentially be incomprehensible, you know, not too long ago.
Absolutely, yes. The Kubernetes made it a lot more realistic to perform such a massive migration of a live 24/7 business in under 6 months.
It's crazy. You know, obviously the space is fascinating, incredibly complex, but you know, it's perhaps doesn't get the I suppose the attention that perhaps maybe the software development shops or the sort of the consumer facing things have. So I always am curious as to people like yourselves, like how you end up in these kind of roles, because you know, I'm such a moth with that regard. I just go to look towards the shiny things. So if I was a, you know, developer, I would want the glory, if you like, of kind of those kind of, that level of operation. But obviously there's a huge demand, huge, you know, opportunity within, you know, DevOps. So I'm just curious about like what your progress was in order to get to where you're up to now and working on the projects that you're working on now, because it doesn't seem to me that there's quite that linear path really to get into DevOps. It seems like there's a lot of people have such varied backgrounds who kind of do end up in this space. So what was your story?
It's a very good question, Andy. So I've kicked off my career as a software engineer back in Dublin, Ireland. Mm. That company got acquired by IBM, with whom I stayed for about 4 years' time. Mm-hmm. And that was a rather large development organization within itself. We had about 200 people, and I just had a constant curiosity whether the builds could run faster, whether we can do a better job of finding some discrepancies in automated manner. So it was like automating stuff away, and that got noticed, and I've been assigned to work alongside a chief architect of that group at the time, mm. Ronan Mulvaney. He suddenly passed last year, but he's a great guy. So under his leadership, he'd been fresh to the role, so he had no longer a time to dedicate himself to interesting ideas, and I was his guy to go and try things out, go bold, go for crazy ideas that can be of multiplicative effect to a large group of people of our development environments, of our development organization. So some of the things I've been working on is to migrating away from Windows to Mac as a development platform to speed up some builds, because the product itself was fairly old and it was running on Java Enterprise Edition. So there was a lot of gains to be had from just having like a faster file system and machines able to work with them. I started upgrading the tooling to be more modern and up-to-date, so moving away from XML type of stuff towards a Java build tool called Groovy, building custom plugins to again do some automation. I really like that. So the biggest drive for me from the switch from a software developer where I was delivering features for some specific product and some specific domain towards a more DevOpsy and developer productivity focused role was that developer productivity roles are universal in some sense. They're not bound to a domain of that specific business, mm-hmm. but rather it's a global problem for that type of builds, for that type of programming language. Therefore, there's kind of more community to it. There was more best practices around. And I could learn from a wider scope of people and apply myself to this job. And because I love learning naturally and trying things out, so it fit really, really well with me. So then I moved to London for a role at Loveholidays, whom didn't have any DevOps at the time. So I was kind of a Java developer and DevOps, but the scope of work at the company was quite massive in terms of what could be improved to, again, be that multiplicative force of delivering more value to the business than they gave it me. And that worked out really well. And over time, I built out a DevOps function and I'm heading up a small group. And it's a success story after all.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the value in kind of DevOps as well is significant towards the bottom line. And I think something that people perhaps don't necessarily first, their instinct isn't necessarily to think about that, you know, from the commercial perspective. But I'm sure that it's something that has been on your conscience that, you know, we want to drive efficiencies and profitability through the work that you do. And I'm just curious, obviously, being a technical person as you are, like how much that side of things does play on your conscience and how much, you know, that gives you a sense of kind of fulfillment as well as actually executing, you know, effectively on the technical side of things as well.
I'm really driven by efficiencies. Mm-hmm. I'm really driven by scale. So if you can combine both efficiency and scale, it's like a pinnacle of my job satisfaction. Mm-hmm. So if I can do something big that matters and do it really well, that there is minimized waste to it, I'm happy. So clearly things like infrastructure costing business quite a lot of money, but so is the developer time, and so is opportunity cost. Mm-hmm. So I believe that DevOps is in a very fortunate position to be on a crossroads of all these things and being able to drive value in all the directions. So it's really hard choice to choose which way to go, but the opportunities are somewhat endless.
Yeah. I mean, you can totally see that. And how comfortable did you feel, I suppose, making a case for that? Because obviously, I suppose, from your perspective, it makes total sense, right? That this should be a path that you pursue. But I'm sure that there was points where you have to create a case for, you know, pursuing with, you know, Kubernetes work or whatever. And even though obviously it seems like kind of a no-brainer to have done what you've done now in hindsight, at the time, I'm just wondering like how much of a, you know, how much of a proposal it ultimately was, or was it just relatively intuitive to where you ended up just kind of building the project? Or was that kind of a, you know, a process in itself to try and almost convince that this is the road to be going down? And yeah, just wondering kind of how that played out and how kind of comfortable you felt with that.
I see where you're coming from. So maybe to step back a little, so far in my career, almost everything that I'm doing is somewhat novel to me, and I haven't done it at either that scale or that complexity or of that big of an impact. And it's an ever-growing and increasing ride. So with my journey with Loveholidays, as I said, I've started as a developer. Therefore, business would not even accept an idea that a certain engineering talent may not be fully dedicated to delivering features to our customers to drive their success stories. Therefore, by making smaller changes, proving myself that I'm capable and those are driving a real business value that could be in excess of, let's say, feature work that I can deliver instead, I kept on building my own sort of reputation within the company, saying that I can't be 100% sure that this is all of this going to work out, but there's a very high probability that by doing this or that, we're going to have more features delivered overall if instead of MiFoxing and features are going to be focusing on the build times for our developers or their development environments or some other DevOps aspects of our practices. And by spending 3 years with the company, you definitely build up a lot of story to what you've been delivering so far. So this have certainly helped me when a year ago, around January or February, we decided that if we want to meet our next peak season, which was a year away, or even less so, we really have to abandon our on-premise infrastructure and move towards the cloud.
Mm.
So we had at some pragmatic level of approach to it. So we attempted a number of public cloud providers where we compared the performance of our most performance critical part of the platform. We also got a sense how is it like for us to develop and use those public cloud providers, because we somewhat specific would like to be quiet in control of things and also would like to minimize the amount of busy work and bureaucracy. We just would like to get going with the stuff and keep delivering value as fast as possible.
Mm.
So the end result for us was a GCP. So once we decided that GCP is something we're happy with, we had to build up a business case saying that unless we're going to make this leap of faith, there are problems coming ahead because of when you're on-premise world, you have a number of problems. Your lead times could be 5-6 weeks to get a new server. You might also need to configure it. Your servers might break and you're not going to get a new one for again, a couple of weeks' time. And if it's all part of your capacity planning, you can miscalculate it really wrongly. So you're either going to pay through the roof for capacity that you don't even need, or you're going to have no capacity to satisfy your customers. Neither of the scenarios are good. Therefore, you're always trying to go for the middle, and middle could be a miss. So having this story has also helped. Plus, we kind of, over our lifetime, we reached the perhaps a peak of a physical platform at the time. So our choice was either go and extend the team and hire dedicated infrastructure people to simply keep the lights on. So none of them would deliver the value in the sense of providing something new. We would not expand on our capabilities. All we'll do, we'll spend a lot of money on new infrastructure and new people to keep the lights on. And given that we are one of the fastest travel businesses in UK, it didn't fit our business model. We want to grow. Therefore, we needed something that can grow and improve alongside with us. So being able to tell the story about Kubernetes being very flexible and GCP being very scalable and elastic, and that fits our seasonal traffic patterns, has really helped to drive the business. So it certainly wasn't an immediate yes, because it's also a huge risk moving platform that stayed in one place for 8 years, that was something completely new, unknown, and where nobody within the organization had any prior experience in.
Yeah.
But I was going to say that this was an excellent choice to make this leap of faith, and it's paid off multiple times already.
Yeah.
So I'm very happy about it.
Yeah. Still a leap of faith, though. I like the way you put that, though. It still is that, but, you know, hindsight, it's a tremendous achievement. Are you the kind of person that's never really kind of shied away from things like that? What's your approach in general just to things, whether it's like, I suppose, you know, work related or not? Have you always kind of taken that approach to just kind of like, let's just do it and figure it out and see if it works?
Somewhat. I also try to be risk conscious, but not risk averse. So to me, not doing anything and remain keeping the status quo in that very situation was the biggest risk possible.
Mm.
Therefore, any type of action would be a lesser risk to the organization than performing none. Therefore, it was a very easy choice to make for me. And I had to take my brain and put it on other people's heads so they can also understand that it takes a while to deliver the message, but it gets there. And yeah. The rest is history.
Yeah, of course. You know, we talked about like the fulfillment that you get earlier, and obviously, you know, you've kind of been through this and achieved so much even while you've been at Love Holidays. when you're in a position where you're at now, obviously making such monumental leaps, is there still, do you think, loads of scope for personal growth, personal development in your mind? Or do you find just in general, not just at Love Holidays, but just in general, that kind of the more you achieve, it's the more difficult it can tend to become to try and, you know, continuously sort of motivate yourself, continuously be, compelled by new ideas and feel fulfilled to the same extent that you perhaps have in recent years? Do you find that a challenge, or is it something that you think there is still so much scope for, learning and continued achievements?
I personally still super hungry, and I knew that I want to be in the cloud for years. And the fact that I got there, and I also got my favorite platform of Kubernetes to orchestrate applications within the company, just only opened the floodgates for interesting and very innovative things to do. So I currently see no end of future feature work that I want to deliver. So in that regard, I'm really hungry, and there is plenty to do. Being in a company that is fast growing and doubling up every single year means that the challenges that I had 3 years ago are laughable right now. The challenges I had 2 years ago, also laughable. Even last year looks easier compared to what it is now. So you have to evolve with the company, or you're going to just get off the train, because you just can't keep up with it. So it challenges you, and you grow alongside. So it's a really good place to be.
Awesome, mate. That sounds so cool. Must be, an incredibly exciting time for you. I suppose from a goal setting perspective as well, are you the kind of person that, do you put time frames on things, or is it just that, from that respect, obviously you mentioned things get harder, it's an incredibly compelling place to be, but how do you actually do that? How do you kind of work your way through trying to achieve similar goals? I think it's an interesting and a challenging one for people, because, I think some people find themselves putting sort of deadlines on things, or, financial associations with things. How do you kind of approach it, knowing that you've got, so much ahead of you? Do you just put one foot in front of the other, or is it, working towards an end goal? How do you approach it?
It's a very deep question, and maybe it will take some thinking time. If your question is purely about my journey in Love Holidays, I would say that until it becomes a household brand where every single person I talk to says, oh yeah, Love Holidays, sure, that's when I'll be happy, when I know, oh yeah, we made it. So that's kind of easy metric to judge by, but it's really hard to make it real. So it's like 2-in-1, simple yet very hard to achieve.
So you're quite comfortable, I suppose, with the idea of a long-term goal, whereas some people almost feel the need to have short-term wins, when no matter how big it is, to kind of keep them motivated, because sometimes something so far away can, and I'm not necessarily saying that that's that far away, by the way, I'm just saying, relatively speaking, it can seem almost daunting or overwhelming at times.
It's a good question. I can't say that I'm either of a kind, whether I'm super instant gratification or very short feedback loop guy, or versus I'm a strategic guy that I know it's going to come in 10 years and I'm just going to sit and wait for the interest to build up into my fortunes. It's probably a mix for various things. With Love Holidays, I know that there is a continuous growth feedback into myself, because I'm being challenged and I'm doing new interesting things one after another. And there is, again, as I said, no shortage of ideas in my mind. It's like exploding with stuff. I'm happy, therefore I just will let it be that way. And there are short-term wins, that there's week-on-week things that improve, there are monthly things that got better, and then there are huge changes like migration to GCP or Kubernetes that might happen only once in a couple of years, or even more rarely. It could be once-off event for a lot of companies to get into the cloud, and I was happy to be part of that journey. Does it answer?
It does. Well enough? Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's a, like you said, it's a deep question. There's just, you know, there's no right answer to it. It's just yeah, some people kind of don't like to think about it. So sometimes I think people get annoyed that I ask such a deep question, because it's like, well, I'm just doing it, you know, I'm just living it, you know. And that's also a good answer. There is no bad answer with a question like that.
If you think about being in DevOps area and being in London, it's like being in the crosshair of recruiters and companies looking for the talent that you've got. So this is an always ongoing temptations happening left and right. So it puts a certain challenge on your role. So you have to be in a really good spot to still meet and maintain this level of happiness, because there is just so much going on, and you always feel like, am I missing out on opportunity cost by doing this versus other things?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess at some point you just need to switch off that thinking and focus on what you're doing. And if overall you're not happy with what you're doing, make a switch. If you're satisfied with where you are and where you're heading to, just don't distract yourself away from what really matters to you.
Awesome. I think that's a good point to finish on, Dmitry. I think we're right about half an hour. I think that was awesome. Let's leave it there, mate. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.